This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
False COVID information is back on Twitter. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Twitter is no longer removing false information about COVID-19 and vaccines. The company quietly made the change last week. We're learning about it just now. Marketplace's Nova Sappho has been following this and joins us. Hi, Nova.
Good morning, Sabri.
So what do we know about this change and what its effects have been so far?
So Twitter has offered very little in terms of the specifics about what this change means. Now, on its blog, Twitter published just one sentence on the topic saying that effective November 23, so that's last Wednesday, it no longer was enforcing its COVID-19 misleading information policy. Now, Twitter has said it suspended more than 11,000 accounts under this policy and taken down some 100,000 pieces of content. So what happens now? Well, presumably, a lot of similar content stays up. And we've reached out to Twitter for more information, Sabri, but haven't heard back yet.
Does this fit in with Musk's bigger plans for Twitter?
Well, let's put it this way. On the very day this policy change apparently took force, Musk said on Twitter that beginning this week, he would grant amnesty to suspended accounts, provided they hadn't broken the law or spammed people. So he's signaling that he's heading in this direction of a more hands-off approach. Of course, also keep in mind that Twitter's staff is less than half what it used to be, right, before Musk took over. Its content moderation staff has shrunk, so it can't handle as much moderation as before anyway, Sabri.
All right, Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you so much.
Sure thing.
At the University of California, about 12,000 postdoctoral scholars and researchers who've been on strike for weeks reached a tentative agreement with their employer. The new contract includes pay hikes, increased paid family leave, and discounts for e-bikes. Other academic workers around the country are watching. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more.
The way the academic worker system is set up in the U.S. is super dated, says Sean Edmund Rogers. He studies labor relations as a professor at the University of Rhode Island.
I did my PhD when I was in my 30s. I had a family, a child. My mother-in-law lived with us. That is not the PhD student of 1936.
But Rogers, who made $24,000 when he started as a PhD student, says the university model still assumes graduate workers have few financial obligations. The strike at the University of California could spur calls for higher wages among graduate students around the country. But
the money is problematic.
Tim Kaine is a professor of higher education at the University of Georgia. He says many states don't fund public university systems at the same levels that they used to.
Which then means that the money to fund these places is coming from private sources, tuition dollars being a main one.
Kaine also points out a lot of the academic research is funded by federal research grants, which may have to be adjusted as worker compensation goes up. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.6%. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up in the 2 to 0.3% range. The Dow future is basically flat. The yield on the 10-year Treasury is 3.733%.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
10 years ago this week, hundreds of fast food workers in New York City walked off the job, demanding better wages and working conditions and union rights. It was that protest that would kick off what became known as the Fight for 15, which advocates for a $15 minimum wage. Today, we are joined by Marketplace digital producer Dylan Mietinen, who took a look at where the movement stands 10 years on. Hi, Dylan.
Hey, Sabri.
Why don't you remind everybody where exactly the federal minimum wage stands today?
So the federal minimum wage has stagnated at around $7.25 per hour since 2009. Last year, a proposed $15 federal minimum wage failed in the Senate. And one of the reasons I looked into this is decades-high inflation, of course, is eroding the real value of the federal minimum wage. If a full-time worker earns the federal minimum wage, they get $15,080 per year pre-tax, and that's roughly $1,500 above federal poverty guidelines. Various states have different minimum wages. A dozen states plus D.C. are moving toward a $15 minimum wage through incremental pay increases, as are corporations like Target and Starbucks. I should note that that's distinct from the federal hourly minimum wage for tipped workers, which has stayed at $2.13 per hour since 1996.
Why is it that the U.S. can't find agreement at the federal level anyway on what the minimum wage should be?
You know, that is a great question. A 2021 Pew survey found that the majority of Americans do favor a $15 federal minimum wage, but research has kind of been mixed on the economic impact of raising the minimum wage. Some say that it will reduce the overall employment in the U.S., and opponents point to small businesses, especially having a hard time stomaching that increase for workers. But research also finds that raising the minimum wage could increase economic development, especially for low-wage workers, and could also help reduce the wage gap between white workers and workers of color.
So at its core, 10 years on, has this fight for a $15 minimum wage been successful?
I mean, in terms of its most basic demand, no, right? The U.S. has not achieved a $15 minimum wage. But, and this is a big but, I spoke with Mary Kay Henry, who's the international president of the Service Employees International Union. And look, progress is not always perfectly linear. What she talked about was that, hey, this labor movement began a decade ago. And since then, the notion of a $15 federal minimum wage has moved from something that's radical and almost laughable in some circles to something that's been thrust into national political discourse. And that's a big win, she says.
All right. Marketplace digital producer Dylan Mietinen, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Sabri.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.